Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com.
Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Many of us look forward to winter in Wisconsin because it gives us a chance to enjoy sports that rely on ice and snow. And this year, much of the state has had snow on the ground for weeks already, and that means a lot of people are out there enjoying it, many on their cross-country skis. And if you like to cross-country ski, or maybe you've never tried it but you're tempted, this is a great show for you. Chad McGrath, our guest, is the author of several cross-country skiing and hiking guidebooks, including great cross-country ski trails, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and Ontario. Chad, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here and talking again.
It's wonderful. Wonderful to have you with us. What have cross-country ski conditions been so far this season around the state?
Well, it's been good, and it's been good early and long. The only drawback, as everybody knows, is it's been awfully chilly some of the time, and it can be a little daunting to people to hear that it's 10 below and wind chills and such. But I think if we persevere with the right clothing and the right attitude, it's still very skiable out there, even when it's very cold.
And, you know, I think it's an event or something, a recreational opportunity that pretty much your age, your physical ability, almost anybody can do it, can't they?
Sure, yeah. I think you have to find the equipment that works for you. That's unfortunately probably one of the barriers to the sport, is people get a little confounded by the equipment. But if you go to a store that sells equipment and you talk to a person there who's knowledgeable about it, they can simplify it for you and take some of the mystery out, and then you can rent or buy and get out there and give it a try.
Yeah. If you've never skied before, what's the best way to learn?
I think I have taught skiing for about 30 years, and so I'm partial to suggesting that you find somewhere where you can take a lesson. Or there are a number of places around the state now that, you know, have group lessons and have lessons virtually for free, and you can get started by doing that. There'll be some instruction in the equipment and how to put it on and what to do with it. And when you get out there, some instruction in one of the first things I teach people is, especially groups, is we do an all fall down exercise. Everybody has to fall down, and then more importantly, everybody has to get up. There's a way to get up. It's a little hard sometimes with those long things on your feet, but you can instruct people on how to do that, and that takes one of the barriers away.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the basic equipment you need or should someone invest in if they're sure they want to get started? You know, what kind of initial costs, too, are we talking about?
Well, I think if you're thinking ahead and you go to one of the ski swaps that's held by clubs around the state, I know Wausau has one, Minocqua has one, Eau Claire has them, you can, and certainly Dane County has some, you can pick up necessary equipment for probably less than $100-$150. I think the problem with that sometimes is you don't exactly know what you're looking for and you don't know what you're getting. But and if you can go to stores and pick up equipment for probably $200 to $250, especially toward the end of the season. And I always recommend that if you're brand new, go somewhere where you can rent equipment. Some stores rent, and many ski centers rent equipment. And you can go in and get fitted with the right thing and go out and give it a shot.
William in Frederick has a comment for us. William, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Chad, and thanks for the show today. Yeah, up in the west northwest corner of Wisconsin. We've got some tremendous ski trails up here, and hopefully Chad has ventured up here. But this Saturday, we have the 17th annual Balsam Winterfest ski race at the Balsam Branch or D.D. Kennedy Park, just north of Amory, Wisconsin. And if you're familiar with Balsam Branch, that trail is like 12 kilometers of the Berkey Trail. They've got four lighted kilometers that are on until 11 o'clock at night. It's one of the premier trails, and we're like 60 miles from the Twin Cities. But there are Balsam Winterfest races this weekend, 10K, 20K, a high school race, and a kids race. Registration 9 to 10, and the event starts probably at 10:15 for the high school event and 11 o'clock for the other stuff. So it's billed as a freestyle race, but there are tracks set on the edges, so both styles can participate.
Wow. So that's this weekend.
Yeah, this Saturday. Weather should be perfect. I skied the Balsam Branch on Tuesday, and it was tremendous. So.
Well, Chad, have you been on that branch?
I have. It was a number of years ago, but it is a very enjoyable ski and very well-groomed back at least when I was doing. I'm sure it's groomed well now, too.
Yeah, it's a combination. It's a joint venture between Polk County and the Amory Ski Club, and part of it's on Polk County property, and part of it's on private property owned by a church camp, and they mow it in the summer and maintain the trail. So, I mean, you get a heavy frost, and you can ski on it.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And is there a website or anything?
The event itself is listed on Skinny Ski.
Okay, yeah. Skinny. Go to Skinny Ski. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I wanted to mention skinnyski.com. That's a website that has most of the trails are mentioned on it. It also has reports from skiers who can write a few sentences about their experience there. So there's a lot of very up-to-date information about trails. And this year it hasn't been maybe quite as important to have that information because most trails are open and groomed well. But in years when there's poor snow or freezing and thawing, it'll give you the latest scoop on what's going on out there on a trail you might want to go to.
Skinnyski.com.
Yes.
Carl, we put that up on our, Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today, is doing his usual great job. He'll have that up on our Facebook page, and in case people want to get to it, they just go there and they'll have the link. Jay and Holman, your turn. Hi, Jay.
Hello, Chad. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
My question is, I'm having my second childhood now and got another English setter like I had in my youth, and I want to know if you're hearing any grouse flushes while you're out there in the silent woods.
Any what?
Grouse flushes.
Oh, grouse flushing, yes. Sorry. Oh, yeah, I've been scared by grouse numerous times. As people probably know, they tend to overnight in the loose snow, and then you can walk up or ski up right next to them, and they'll fly up and scare the heck out of you.
Yeah, not often enough when I'm out there, but I just haven't talked to you in a number of years, and so I wanted to get in and say hello.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Maybe you have a question about cross-country skiing. Do you cross-country ski? What got you started? What do you like about it? And if you've never done any, what would you like to do? What do you need to know to get started? We've certainly got the answers here with our guest, Chad McGrath. And the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. A topic that often comes up when we talk about winter sports is etiquette and trail etiquette. And what would you like skiers to remember and keep in mind about sharing the space?
Well, since we've developed a lot of trail systems that have both a diagonal stride track and then a skating track.
Yeah.
They're wider, and that skaters need to be cognizant of not skating in the diagonal track and not messing it up, because people get very sensitive about having their diagonal track messed up. And so I think skaters got to respect that. I think people who diagonal stride and aren't skating, they need to maybe not be so worried about skate skiers intimidating them. I've talked to a number of striding skiers who don't skate, who don't like or get intimidated by some of the racing folks who go whizzing by them on the skate trail. And I mean, most skate skiers are fine. They're very accomplished. They know how to ski, and they aren't going to bother anybody in the striding lane. So, you know, there needs to be a little accommodation of each other out there on the trail, and less feeling of being intimidated by the striders. I think the other thing that's useful is not breaking the rules. If the trail says it's one way, live with that.
Yeah.
One way. Sometimes you'll see people going the wrong way on trails, and it can be a little dangerous when you're coming down a hill and you're going the wrong way and you run into somebody coming up that hill. So that's a very important piece. I guess the other thing is a lot of trails don't allow dogs, and I respect that. I tend to think that sometimes trails are a little over zealous about protecting them from dogs. There's a number of trails up here now in the north, Mecca Trail and a new system, Windman Trail, are both dog-friendly. And we need some dog-friendly trails. People like their dogs. They like playing with their dogs on the trail. And some of us like the skeeter. So I think respect the no dogs on the trail. But on the other hand, I think some of the trail people might want to consider a day or a time when dogs are okay out there. I know Winter Park in Minocqua, which is one of the premier places in the state, they now have a 6-kilometer dog-friendly trail where you can skeeter. I think you need to have your dog on a line, and you need to be actually controlling it. But except on Saturdays, you can go there and skeeter with your dog.
And skeeter is having the dog kind of pull you along?
Yeah, skeeter, you get your dog a harness, and you get yourself some line to hook yourself up, and you get yourself a belt that you can wear, and then you get connected, and the dog pulls you along if the dog wants to do that.
Yeah, if the dog wants to do that.
They don't always want to do that. But if you get a husky or a dog that likes to pull, it isn't too hard to train them to do it. And,
A lot of fun. We're going to talk somewhere with Chad McGrath, author of many cross-country skiing and hiking guidebooks. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us. Then we will be right back. Some people live for summer, but there are a whole lot of us who really enjoy getting out during a beautiful Wisconsin winter. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, a great way to enjoy Wisconsin's natural areas while also getting some solid exercise is by cross-country skiing. And Chad McGrath is our guest today. He's the author of several cross-country skiing and hiking guidebooks, including Great Cross-Country Ski Trails, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and Ontario. And Chad, once again, great to have you with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Like being here.
Tell us about your books. And by the way, your book, and I have a link to it on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, but give us an idea of what we'll find when we read it.
Well, the most recent one, which is the one about trails around Lake Superior, I decided that I wanted to do something fairly adventuresome, so I decided to ski trails from Thunder Bay, Canada, all the way down the north shore of the lake, around the corner into Wisconsin, and then all across the Upper Peninsula back into Ontario again. So I skied 61 trails. I skied more than that, but I put 61 trails in the book. And I did all that in about a winter and a half, and just had a great time, and also managed to produce a book from it. And it was a lot of fun, and the trails, most of them are still there, and they change, obviously, the minute you put a book like that out. It's a little out of date, but basically it's still accurate, and there's a lot of wonderful places to ski in that Lake Superior watershed. Plus, there's an incredible amount of snow. This year hasn't been a problem, but I heard from a friend yesterday that up by Copper Harbor, they're already up to 180 inches of snow this year. So
wow.
Yeah, if you're having trouble finding snow, you can almost always find it somewhere on the Keweenaw Peninsula, or even down through Ironwood and Hurley. There's they have like 173 inches of snow a year average, so there's a lot of snow.
And you can join in, by the way, with your questions or comments for Chad at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can even post a photo or a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. What are some of your favorite spots around the state, Chad?
Well, I think I might have found a new favorite one just 3 days ago. The Winman, W-I-N-M-A-N, it's short for Winchester Manitouish Trails, which are north of Manitouish Waters on Highway W. They just opened this year. They're a cooperative project of a private individual and the local nature center called the Discovery Center. And it's about, they've got about 7 or 8 miles of unreproduced trail, so that and there's a few loops here and there that you have to cross twice to do them. But it's a really nice feel to it. I've only skied it once. I really enjoyed the flow of the trail, both skating and striding. And I think it might become one of my favorites. Winter Park is always a favorite. People love Winter Park.
And where is that?
It's 6 miles outside, 12 miles roughly outside of Minocqua, near Squirrel Lake. They've got over 60 kilometers of trail, and it's usually well-groomed. And then another one, which is a ABR, Active Backwood Retreats up in Ironwood, who always have enough snow, or almost always do. And they just hosted the Sisu Ski Fest this last weekend, and it's a point-to-point race that starts at the trail system at ABR south of Ironwood and ends down the main street in Ironwood, which is always it's always fun. And then there's, of course, the Berkey Trail, which is people generally have a love-hate relationship with, because it's such a difficult trail. There's so many hills, and it's a grind sometimes, and that's where the Birkebeiners run in at the end of February every year.
Yeah, and that is a grind. you're trying to race on it. It's a real grind, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Oh man, do you do a lot of that racing anymore, Chad?
Not a lot of racing. No, I do the Berkey, and but I can't really call it racing anymore.
Understood.
I'm getting from place to place, and that's fine. I never did like the anxiety associated with racing, and I think that's true of a lot of people. But you don't have to put yourself in the race mode to go to some of these events, like the one at Balsam Lake the fellow was talking about. You can just go. You get support. There's people on the trail to give you water or food or whatever, and it can be just a pleasant ski with support, which is a nice thing to have out in the cold some days.
Well, you know, it's kind of like if you're doing a half marathon or something like that, or a 10K run during the summer months. You know, you go out. You're not really. You don't have to win the race.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's people there that give you support. So it's a very similar kind. It's just the weather is different, really, about it.
Yeah, it's exactly like summer races in the sense of support. And sometimes in the winter, I think it's nice to have support.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if it's a long race.
We had mentioned your books as a good resource. What are some other good resources or spots for people to go to? I think there's a DNR link, isn't there, on the Facebook?
Yeah, there is a DNR link. You can go to the DNR website and find it. There are a lot of trails in state parks, as you might imagine, and in the Northern Highlands State Forest and in the Kettle Moraine. There are some great trails. And over the years, you know, I've been working on this stuff for over 20 years now. My first book is that old.
Yeah.
But the DNR grooming has just improved immensely. They've really taken the reins and gotten the right equipment and then put enough resources to it that they really do a pretty nice job up here in the north, and I think in the south too, of putting together a trail system that, that is well-groomed and taken care of.
Robert in Stevens Point has a question for you. Robert, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Say, I started out cross-country skiing using the type where you would wax both the kick area and the glide area. And after a few years of that, I advanced to the waxless. I've never applied any glide wax to the waxless. And, Chad, I was just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Oh, sure. You'll enjoy skiing more if you put some glide wax to the tip and the tail of those waxless skis, just like you would any other ski. That base needs some wax to slide better. And even the patterned area, which is where the waxlessness is, that's what gives you your grip, that patterned area can benefit from a paste wax. They sell a number of different groups, types of wax that you can just put on with a cloth and then get it so it doesn't cake up in the grooves, and that'll give you a little more glide too, but not interfere with your grip.
There you go.
Excellent. Okay, I'll be doing that.
All right,
okay.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Robert. Thank you for calling. Gina in Shiocton, it is your turn. Hi, Gina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was actually just cross-country skiing today.
Good.
And they had two different types of skis. So one that has the buckle in the front, and the ones that I have that I bought used have the three points that you put your shoe into. So I didn't know which one would be better, or it seemed like the points were easier to use with the poles to get on and off.
Okay. I think the pointed ones are generally called three-pin bindings, and have like the sole of the shoe sticks out, and that's what you stick in there and slam down the bar on. Does that sound right?
The
yeah,
toe,
that's
you
the
mean?
Ones
yeah.
I
okay,
yeah.
Those have been around for a long time. The other ones you describe are newer. There's a number of newer types of binding that actually do hold your boot a little firmer and don't slide around as much and give you a little more control. So although you may find the getting into and out of the old three-pin bindings more easy, the actual better for skiing would be the clip type that you described.
Hmm.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as we visit with author Chad McGrath about cross-country skiing. We have a question from Jeff who wonders if you can tow your kid behind you to teach them cross-country skiing.
Well, you know, I suppose you could. I don't know if that's going to teach them a lot, if depending on their age. And I have a grandson who I can pull along, and he loves to fall down.
Yeah.
So he just falls down a lot, and I'm going back and pulling him up, and we have a good time. But I think the best way to teach kids cross-country skiing is to, number one, don't give them poles if they're 5, 6 years old or younger. And you want them to just have fun. So take them somewhere that's not too remote, and that they can do this for, you know, however long they want to. It might only be 10 minutes. You don't want to burn them out on it, and let them play on the skis. And they're going to love going down hills, and they're going to love falling. And so you got to enjoy that with them. You can't tell them, no, come on, don't fall, blah blah blah. They're going to fall. They like to fall, and just let them have fun. And over time, over the next few years, you'll give them poles and teach them how to stand up. Teach them when they're interested in balance, then you work on that. But you can't teach them things they aren't interested in. It's like the rest of us. If you're not interested, you're not going to do it. And so enjoy it and have them enjoy it and concentrate on enjoyment, not teaching.
Yeah. I think that's a very good. I was thinking about my own experiences with my daughter Emily and teaching or working with her. I don't know how much teaching I did. My wife Renee, she likes to take off, and I don't care. So, you know, Emily and I, when she was 4 years old, we're out there, you know, and a lot of falling down, as you say, and and not very far. Get very far.
That's right.
But it's one of my, you know, one of my really fine memories, and I mean, we still do it, but I mean, those memories of just getting her started way sure. 5-6 years ago.
Sure, yeah. I think I have some good memories already, and they will continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yvonne in Twin Lakes has a comment. Hi, Yvonne.
Oh, good morning. I enjoy all your programs, but I am a downhill skier, alpine skier, and I'd love to get into cross country. My biggest concern, and it's this way with camping also, is wildlife. You know, wolves are out in the wintertime, and your guest spoke about doing Ontario and Upper Thunder mm-hmm. Bay area, about moose being around. And if he could mention any experiences with those two issues. And another question, if he could discuss the length of skis and poles according to your height and weight.
Mm-hmm.
And my third one is camping along trails in the wintertime. Not only the problem with wildlife, wolves particularly, but
mm-hmm.
how safe is that?
All right.
All right. Well, there's quite a bit there.
Yeah. What about the animals?
We got first the wildlife. We have some wolves who frequent the area that I live in. I live way up north and near the Turtle Flambeau Flowage. And this winter I've been actually tracking a pair of wolves that have been around my lake, have been around our kennel. We have some sled dogs. And I'm not afraid of them. I think they're more afraid of me, and that's been consistent. I've found where they've bedded. I've been behind them very recently. I can tell from the track. I'm not an expert, but I don't think you need to worry about wolves when you're out in the wild. If you've got a dog with you and the dog runs away, then that's possible that you might have some trouble, but they're going to be afraid of you. Moose can be a problem. I'd worry more about moose, although there aren't many here. I've skied in Anchorage and had to wait on the trail for half an hour for a moose and a cow and her calf to move off the trail so I could go by. I wasn't going to try to scare her off.
No.
So you got to be careful of moose for sure if you're seeing them. But, you know, you're not going to find them here very often.
Camping along the trails?
Camping. I think there are a number of state parks that you can winter camp in. I'm not sure how contiguous the campsites are to the trails, but I would think that it's very skiable to and from.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the national forests in the area also have campsites and wilderness sites that you can use. So I've done that. So,
and
yeah.
Then finally, what about the length of the skis and the poles, you know, versus your height and weight and so forth?
Yeah, there are some formulas, but I think I'm going to stay away from those. I would suggest that when you go to rent or buy, you talk to the people there, and they'll help you with that. The ski should clearly be taller than you are when you stand them on end. The old rule of thumb is if you put your arm up, the point of the ski should come to your wrist. But that is real general. It depends on the flexibility of the ski and your weight also. So you pretty much need to talk to whoever you're renting or buying from about that. Poles generally come to below your armpit is roughly another measure. Unless you're skate skiing, then they need to be longer, maybe to your lower or upper lip from straight up and down from the ground.
You know, we had a comment from Yvonne, we had a comment from Ralph and Hayward about this whole business. And he says ski swaps are fun, they're social events, good fundraisers, but for a little extra money, it's well worth buying new or demo skis from knowledgeable staff who can fit you properly. And he says Hayward has two of the best shops in the Midwest.
They do. They have some good shops. There's ski shops
you know, and a number of Rhinelander has a great shop. Both Minocqua and Active Backwood Retreats up in Ironwood have Winter Park in Minocqua. They both have real good ski shops that you can go to, and you can try equipment. So yeah, you can go to a place that has equipment and try it often.
Yeah, Paul emailed us and said his parents lost their old boots in a flood, but they still have the skis and the poles. And then we were just talking about this earlier. He was wondering about boots with three-point bindings. Are they still around, available new, or are you stuck shopping secondhand?
I think you pretty much have to do some secondhand shopping. There may be some new ones out there, but I haven't looked at that in a long time. I don't know for sure.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. And then we have Tim in Madison with a question. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Tim.
I met some friends this past weekend who are from Chicagoland, and they said they are thrilled with the snow they have down there this year for a change. There have been fits and starts trying to get ski clubs started there, but every time December and January rolls around, they don't have any snow. So they end up visiting us in Wisconsin. But this year they did have a race that had been postponed or canceled ever since 2010. They were finally able to have that race.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, very good.
Sorry about that consistency for them, but it just tells us how very fortunate we are to have so much dependable snow with knowledgeable groomers and innkeepers in northern Wisconsin.
For sure. Yes, yeah. And the groomers deserve a lot of credit because it takes some real skill to be able to do that correctly. And some of them even go to school for that. There's a few places that teach that these days.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Active Backwood Retreats people I know have a groomers weekend, and they people pay and come up and spend the time learning the equipment and doing the grooming.
Yeah. Tim, thank you.
Oh, sure. I just want in the grooming. It sounds like quite an investment. The machines I see them use look very expensive, and
I can't
blame the people in Chicago if they don't invest in a lot of that stuff, knowing that they only can ski once every 5 years.
For sure, that's got to be a risk.
Off to us.
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
There are some variations on usual skiing that you like to suggest. I know, Chad. One is nighttime skiing. The other is springtime skiing.
Yes. Springtime brings to mind May 3rd of last year. It snowed up here about 16, 17 inches on May 2nd, 1st and 2nd. And the Berkey Trail over by Hayward and Cable, they actually groomed that trail on the 2nd. And I went over on the 3rd with about 200 or 300 other people, not together, but we all ended up there. And we skied our hearts out for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on that snow, and it seemed like the middle of January. It was just an incredible experience on the 3rd of May.
Holy moly.
So, yeah, it was something else. And it didn't get above freezing that day, so it really didn't seem like spring skiing. But we skied into April last year. I mean, I probably skied 7 or 8 times in April. And they were good skis. And sometimes when it's 45 degrees out and there's good snow, it's hard to beat that after a winter of cold. So we'll find that again this spring, I hope.
And then the nighttime skiing, too.
Yeah, nighttime. One of the things nighttime skiing does for you, it really helps you with your balance. You can use a light, of course, a headlamp of some kind. And I like going out when there's a little bit of moon or a lot of moon, like there has been the last few nights, and turning the light off and just skiing, and you can see pretty darn well without the light, and you hear owls and experience all kinds of cool things.
Chad, on that note, we're going to close. I thank you so much. Wonderful to talk with you. I want to get my skis out and get out there this afternoon. I'd love to do that.
Yes, I'm hoping to go also. So.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Chad McGrath is the author of several cross-country skiing and hiking guidebooks. I hope you'll take a look at them. We've got a post, or a link, I should say, on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and I hope you'll go to those and take a look. And he obviously knows a whole lot about cross-country skiing. Tomorrow, we'll learn about a wonderful program that helps parents develop problem-solving skills in their children. Then at 11:45, Rick Sini of FairCompare.com comes by to talk about how to find a cheap winter vacation in 4 easy steps. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.